Welcome to Hochoka Podcast.
Hello, Madaki Epi, and welcome to Hochoka here at the center of St. Joseph's Indian School's campus. I'm Scott Wooster, today's Hochoka host. I'm glad you have joined our circle to hear Joseph Marshall III, historian, writer, teacher, craftsman, administrator, actor, and public speaker. He joins us to talk about leadership in pre-reservation Lakota society, how this can reframe our understanding of leadership in today's world, and what parents and communities might do to revive the concept of leadership the Lakota lived. So, Joseph, it's good to have you back at Hochoka.
Good to be here again.
Yeah.
Thank you.
As we prepare for this conversation today, I keep thinking about our current state of affairs in the world as we have them, and you think about how polarized things have become. The state of politics in this country is definitely polarized.
Exactly.
And there's the wisdom of the Lakota concept of leadership that we have. We're going to do this over a couple of different conversations, but the starting point that I'd like to think of is what I just said in the intro, which is true leadership is only possible when character is more important than
Absolutely.
Authority. What does that mean to you?
Leadership is not a prize.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a status necessarily in the pre-reservation days that was considered, on the order of being a celebrity.
Mm-hmm.
Leadership, if character is important to leadership. The one characteristic that I think was the most important then was selflessness.
Mm-hmm.
That is the most important aspect of character that people generally look for in anyone who they thought had all of the ability to be a good leader. Selflessness. In fact, there were a lot of teachings about leadership, and one of the first teachings that was provided was the simple statement that always said, look after others before you look after yourself. And when you stop to think about that statement, that is the underlying strength of what leadership is in Lakota culture prior to the reservations. So that's why I say that characteristic, that aspect of anyone's character is the most important.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes it feels like leaders today
they do not have that selflessness. They don't display it. They don't demonstrate it. They don't live it.
Right.
At all.
They're showing the me first.
Exactly. Kind of.
So in the pre-reservation days, number one, were there bad leaders? And what would happen if someone were to lead in a way that didn't seem responsible or selfless to the people?
One can say they were bad leaders, but they didn't last very long.
Mm-hmm.
Keep in mind that how leaders were made, how they came to be selected as leaders was not the same as it is today.
Mm-hmm.
in our democratic society. We didn't have elections. There were no terms of office. There were no job descriptions. None of that what we associate with leadership today. A person rose to a leadership position by demonstrating the right character, the right traits that made them a good person, first of all, and then selflessness that made them a good leader, because that selflessness helped them to take care of other people first. But of course, sometimes somebody strayed from that mm-hmm. path or tried to act in such a way that did not put the needs of the people ahead of his or her own. In that case, the remedy was simple. You simply stop following them.
Mm-hmm.
That's all it was.
Mm-hmm.
There was no fancy recall election. There was no lectures. There were none of that happening. I mean, there's a popular story that went around that my grandparents told me about a village. One day a man woke up who was the leader, who was the head man of the village, and had been cautioned by his elders to be very careful about some of the decisions he made, some of the advice that he gave. But of course he ignored them and decided to take a different approach that was sort of selfish. And one morning he woke up and found out that he and his family's lodge was the only one left in the village. During the night, everybody had packed up and just left.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that may be an extreme example, but it is nonetheless an example of how people dealt with bad leaders.
Right.
And it was effective.
Yeah. And it's a perfect example. It might be extreme, but it's perfect. It spells it out perfectly.
Right.
And it actually is a kind of a true democracy.
Yeah,
where
it
the
is.
People actually get their voice. And as you said,
right.
It's funny you said recall election because I was thinking the same thing. There were no disputed elections
no.
and that type of thing.
No,
it was
none of that.
It was a whole different kind of thing. Perfect example of democracy.
Right.
What do you consider to be the traits of a leader or the character traits?
Well, there anything that is positive, that is selfless, humility was one of the things that especially elders look for. In a person who they knew had the right character traits to be a leader. Because somebody who is humble is quicker to look after the needs of others before he looks after himself. Mm-hmm. Somebody who is humble has more of a tendency to be tolerant, has more of a tendency to be patient, has more of a tendency to be compassionate. It sort of leads to all the other character traits that, first of all, make a good person, but especially as a foundation for that good person to be a good leader.
Mm-hmm.
Because the people did not want somebody who would think of themselves first and then set aside the needs of the people.
Mm-hmm.
Because the needs of the people being met was the most important thing, whether it was food, whether it was direction, whether it was compassion, whether it was understanding. As long as those needs were met, that's what the leader's job is. He either did it himself or herself, or helped others, fostered that whole approach to mitigating a problem that required any of those answers.
Right. And as soon as the leader takes themselves out of the way, everything else kind of follows
exactly,
naturally.
Exactly, because he's not the main objective of anything that happens.
Right, right. There, you talk about the power of four.
Right.
Culturally, can you just give your idea of what those four?
Exactly. I've taken a bit of time to really study one of my heroes. In Lakota culture, aside from my grandfathers and my father and uncles, historically, I admire people like Sitting Bull, Crazy mm-hmm. Horse, Swift Bear, Spotted Tail, and others who either over time or for periods of time demonstrated those kind of characteristics that made a good leader. The one person I focused on was Crazy Horse,
mm-hmm.
because when I was a boy, I began to hear stories of him from my grandparents from that generation
mm-hmm.
who knew bits and pieces of his life story and the times that he lived in. And so on that foundation, I tried to study what made Crazy Horse a good leader. And it's the same across the board for he or anyone else who rose to a position of a military or civilian leadership. It's that selflessness,
mm-hmm.
humility, but also they had to put, for lack of a better way to put it, four methods of approach to leadership. One was to know yourself, know himself, know the individual leader to know himself.
Mm-hmm.
And then secondly, to know your friends. Third, to know the enemy or the problem. And fourth, to take action first, to be the first to take some kind of action, lead the way.
Mm-hmm.
And those things, those actions, those methods showed up consistently in how he approached certain situations, whether it was on a battlefield or in civilian life.
Mm-hmm.
He always demonstrated one or all of those anytime he tried to mitigate any kind of situation. So when I talk about the power of four, that's what I'm talking about. Know yourself, know your friends, know the enemy, know the problem, and take the lead.
So let's just unpack that, the first of the four, which is the know yourself piece.
Right.
Yeah. Why is that important, and what makes that possible for a leader?
Again, it's always hooked to that trait of selflessness. To know yourself is to understand what your strengths and what your weaknesses are, and to be brutally honest with yourself about what those are.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's what you face the world with. That's what you bring to the job, as it were, as leader, is what you are, what you know, what you can do, what you're capable of, what your feelings are about certain issues. I remember an incident years ago when my wife and I first moved to Santa Fe, New Mexico. We went to an old restaurant. I mean, it was a very old building, one of the oldest buildings in Santa Fe. And there was a restaurant, and that evening it happened to be live music.
Mm-hmm.
So we got a table, we ordered food, and we sat and listened to the music and watched people. And it was crowded because it was a Friday night. And we had a small table, and there was one chair at the table. And somewhere in the course of the evening, a young lady came and asked if she could, you know, use the chair at the table and put her purse on her jacket. She did. And so she went out and mingled with her friends and came back, ordered a drink, would take a drink and go and visit and come back. And this went on over the course of the evening while we were there. We didn't know her. I don't know her name. I could still see her face. But before she left, she came over and leaned. It was so noisy in there, she sort of had a shout to be heard. She leaned across the table and said to us, "Wherever you go, there you are."
Mm-hmm.
And I nodded politely, and, you know, she smiled and left. And I thought about that incident afterwards. And she spoke the truth. Wherever you go, there you are. Whoever and whatever you think you are, whatever you are in reality, whatever you comprise as a person, your character, your habits, your philosophies and your attitudes about life, you always take them with you,
mm-hmm.
no matter what. And the one person you cannot get away from is yourself.
Right.
So one might as well be honest with oneself about what my weaknesses are, what my abilities are, what I can and can't do, because that's what you bring to your life, one thing. And if you're a leader, those are your tools. Those are your strengths. That's what you bring. And it may not be as good as someone else, or it may be different than anybody else, obviously,
mm-hmm.
but it's what you are. It's who you are. And it's what, how you fit in with all those things that you are. So if you know yourself, and really the important is to be honest with yourself about all of these things, then you're, for one thing, you're a better person.
Mm-hmm.
And you have that character trait of being selfless about certain issues.
Yeah.
So that's what it's all about.
I really like your interpretation of that, and it makes me wonder what the gal in Santa Fe
right.
actually meant by it when she leaned
over. I don't know.
It doesn't matter, right?
No.
As long as you took what you needed to take from
exactly.
that. You've written many times, and you and I have had this conversation about, and we agree on this, that the Crazy Horse is a hero of mine too.
Right.
You know, he's somebody that I think we can all look up to. He was emblematic of pre-reservation Lakota leadership.
Right.
Certainly. And I'm wondering how he came to have a healthy self-knowledge. What's your concept of how he knew himself?
Well, he did exactly that. You know, he was aware of who he was. And because of the way he grew up,
mm-hmm.
his family, his father was very influential, and his mother's as well. I say his mother's because his biological mother died when he was four. His father remarried two sisters, and they, I think, had more of an influence on him than his biological mother did. But it was also the village, the extended family, the community. In those days, you know, we lived the idiom, it takes a village to raise a child. Because in our extended family system, the uncles, the aunts, the grandmas, and the grandpas, everybody had something to offer to the younger generation, to all children in the community, in the Teochpa'i growing up. They were all teachers. They were all examples. So Crazy Horse, like everybody else, every other child, male or female, went through that process and was able to have contact with his elders, his, the grandparents and the uncles and the aunts, and they all had an influence on him. And of course, the best kind of teacher is, an is somebody who just leads a good life and is a good example, a good role model. And he had enough of those people to help him understand why it's important to know yourself and to be honest about who you are and what you are. So it was the influence of his family, influence of the community, and the social norms as far as raising a child that really shaped him and a lot of others like him.
Right.
To be, first of all, the kind of person he was. He didn't want to be a leader when he was older. He didn't want leadership, but he was guided toward it because of, you know, the advice of other people, because people saw in him those traits that they wanted in the leader. So they pushed him toward that responsibility. But that, but how he grew up was the important
right
aspect of it.
Right. And I think about the way leaders are created now.
Right.
They, you have to want that leadership, and you promote yourself.
You promote yourself,
which is so different than
exactly
than that that reluctance of, you know, where
right
the you, the people have asked you to govern in a way you didn't ask for that.
Exactly.
And to create that help, the self knowledge that he had then, I always try to frame this, you know, as I work with 7th through 12th grade boys who, you know, are in a far different time than Crazy Horse.
Yes.
And you talk about it takes a village to raise a child. Nowadays with my 13-year-old boys that I might be working with, they're bombarded by a global village, right?
Yes.
You know, where you have access
absolutely
to things all the time.
Right.
And so you're trying to shape your self-knowledge.
And we have very little filters to help those boys, the children of today.
Mm-hmm.
In those days, a lot of the influence was fairly positive because people were trying to always be mindful of the fact that they were the teachers and models for the next generation.
Right.
So they were aware of that.
Yeah. And the roles were more, well, the way I see it is well understood by the people in the village.
Exactly.
Yeah. One thing that I would ask you maybe to talk about is Gigi?
Gigi.
Gigi.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yes. And making weakness a source of strength.
Right. I mean, all the stories say that Crazy Horse and his older sister had a light complexion, and their hair was dark brown to light brown. And, you know, when people found out about that later on, they said, well, he had to have been, maybe he was part white or something along those lines, which is not true. He and his sister had a condition that was, I can't remember the scientific name for it, but it's like two or three steps down from albinism.
Okay.
Where it shows up in people of dark skin, where the skin is a little bit lighter, the hair is lighter, you know, where other Lakota kids had coal black hair and deep brown skin. His was not that, his skin was not that dark, his hair is not that dark. So his mother wisely named him Gigi, which means light hair.
Okay, yeah.
Knowing probably that other children would maybe tease him because of he didn't look exactly like everybody else. He had all the other features,
mm-hmm,
Lakota featured. It was just those two characteristics. So because she named him that, she took away the sting of someone else taunting him with that name.
Right.
So again, she took what she perceived might be a point of weakness or attack from other kids and made it into a strength for him. And so he was able to use it as a way to develop character.
Yeah. I've never heard that story before. I like that.
Yeah.
And then there's also the story of a young man who wanted to join Crazy Horse's village.
Well, yeah, there were a group of young men.
Okay.
This was after some of the Lakota had gone with Red Cloud to Fort Robinson. After Red Cloud signed a treaty and people moved there, that was one of the requirements to give up their arms and move to live under the control of the whites. And the two bands that were still living free nomadic life were Sitting Bull's band and Crazy Horse's mm-hmm. band. So three or four young men broke away from the agency Fort Robinson, mm-hmm. which is in northwest Nebraska, traveled all the way up to what is now north central Wyoming, near the Bighorn Mountains. We mm-hmm. called them the Shining Mountains, in the Powder River Valley.
Yep.
Found Crazy Horse's villages and asked to join his village. And so he invited him to a meal and visited with him, and then invited him to go on a rabbit hunt. And a couple of the young men agreed to go with him, gathered their weapons and went. The others sort of turned their noses up at it. Well, why do we want to go on a rabbit hunt for? Mm-hmm. I'm a man. I'm a mm-hmm. I'm a warrior. Why would I go hunt rabbits?
Mm-hmm.
So he took the 200, two or three hunters that went with him. They hunted rabbits, came home, came back to his village, and he invited them to stay. The others he wanted nothing to do with. And his reasoning was simple. If you're willing to do something as a man, as a warrior, as a hunter, if you're willing to do something so mundane and simple on behalf of the people, then you'll do the big things as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so he was looking for those characteristics in the men that were following him.
Yeah. And that's humbling yourself.
Exactly.
And which leads to self-knowledge.
Right.
Which is great. Joseph, thank you for being with us here today.
My pleasure.
And thank you to you all for joining us here in the Ho-Choka at the center of St. Joseph's Indian Schools campus, where we talk about issues that are central to Native American education today. Until next time. Stay centered.